Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our program today by zeroing in on our Wisconsin fisheries. We've had a great fishery here in the state for a long time, and one of the people who is responsible for a lot of the good work that was done over the last 37 years, at least, is Frank Pratt. Frank recently retired after 37 years working as a senior fisheries biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Hayward Service Center, specifically worked with the waters in Sawyer and Rusk counties, and there are some pretty fine waters in that part of the state. So I'm glad to have him with us today to talk about our Wisconsin fisheries, to reflect on it. I'm sure he'll have some great things to say, and I'm sure there'll probably be some things that trouble him a lot, and he can talk about those as well. And certainly he's ready and willing to answer your questions, and I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Frank Pratt's with us by phone. Hi, Frank. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Good morning. It's a wonderful day. Fish are biting. So exciting.
And we're not out there. We're here talking on the phone, on the radio.
But I'm sitting here tying flies, actually.
Good for you. Well, you've had a how did you develop a passion for fish biology as a field of work?
Well, when I grew up in Massachusetts in Worcester, a pretty large city right in the central part of the state. There were some pretty good fisheries there. My dad started out a pretty avid fisherman, and he would take me fishing, and I gradually caught the bug. And unfortunately, that was in the days of the old bait cast reels, where you got a bird's nest, and my dad would cast out for me, and he'd say, "Now you watch the bobber, and if the bobber goes down, you strike," and blah blah blah. Well, as soon as he turned his back, I would imagine I had a bite. I'd reel it in and try to cast, and there'd be a big bird's nest. And I think after repeated incidences of this phenomenon, I sort of drove him away, but I caught the bug.
You know, we always called those bird's nests professional overthrows.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of professional overthrows to start out my career, I guess.
Well, 37 years not only in the same field, but with the same employer, Department of Natural Resources.
And at the same place.
Did you ever expect that was going to be the case?
No, I did not. Particularly not that, coming to Wisconsin in particular would be, and I grew up a Red Sox fan, so I hesitate to draw this analogy, it'd be like playing single or double A ball and getting a call to come up and play for the Yankees in their heyday. I mean, Wisconsin was and probably still is the number one state fisheries program.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic program and some problems, and we'll get to maybe talking about some of those in a bit. But I know one of the areas, before we go to the phones here, one of the areas that you were heavily involved in was youth fishing and angler education programs. And Take a Kid Fishing was the example, I guess. That's a great effort.
And it's becoming, and it's not like it's gone away. It probably should be and is and still is with me personally, probably one of the number one missions of my profession, because youth are just not fishing anymore, and youth will be basically the future of fishing, and probably the future in terms of aquatic education, probably the future of the environment per se, and the kids just are not gravitating toward outdoor sports anymore, and we need to take action to do something about that.
Yeah. So Take a Kid Fishing been successful over time?
I would say yes. I say if you get enough people doing it, the problem is there aren't enough people out there doing it, and there's a crying need for it. And one of the things that I sort of rededicated myself to in retirement is that I'm going to be in the forefront of making sure that we get out there and educate fellow anglers to be able to go out and educate non-anglers through the certified fish education program. I'm going to actively recruit members of, you know, fellow fishermen go out and get the job done, because there's a crying need, and that's what needs to happen. We need to pass it on.
We need to pass it on. Well, I hope at some point you'll let us have contact information, so if there's people interested in joining up with you and working with you, that they'll be able to do that.
That will be coming in the near future.
All right, great. Well, Bill in Appleton has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hello. My question has to do with slot limits in walleye fishing, and primarily in the Oneida County area. There's a flowage up there that I fish at least a few times every year, and the quality of the walleye fishery has continued to decline. And let me see if I can explain how. A few years back, I went and fished Rainy Lake in Minnesota, and we spent all day long catching walleye between, you know, 20 and 25 inches. And because we wanted to have a shore lunch, we kept hoping that the next fish we caught was going to be a small one. And it was a great pleasure to catch so many, you know, beautiful medium-sized walleyes, and then occasionally catch a small one for the frying pan. And I noticed that I have exactly the opposite experience in this fishery in Oneida County. We over the years have worked harder and harder and harder to catch just one or two in a boat, legal size walleye. And what I'm wondering is, what is the likelihood that there would be some additional slot limits in Wisconsin? You know, keeping a few fish under 17 and maybe one fish over 28 and nothing in between. And are there slot limits anywhere in Wisconsin right now? How is that working, specifically for walleye?
Walleyes are probably our most popular fish here in the state, Frank, at least for eating.
That's a bunch of really good questions, and you're 100% correct. Our angling public really demand of our managers that they deliver some semblance of a quality walleye fishery, and our walleye fisheries are declining. But first, let me speak specifically to the slot question. He said, okay, are there any slot situations in effect, and are they successful? I have one in Soria County, Grindstone Lake, which is a 14 to 18 inch slot, and the objectives of a slot would be A, to produce better catch rates for fish that are within the protected interval. In other words, you're able to catch and release lots more walleye between 14 to 18 inches. It's been very successful in that respect. And the other objective would be to end up with more fish larger than the slot, greater than 18 inches. And in Grindstone Lake, it has been very successful in that respect. But I must call, there's a cautionary statement relative to slots, that they're applicable only to a relatively small proportion of our walleye waters. You need to have at least a moderate growth rate. You need to have high exploitation. And more importantly than anything else, and one of the things that's consistently lacking in many of our walleye fisheries right now, is you need to have high recruitment. In other words, you have to have lots of little baby fish coming in on a consistent basis. And that's one of the things that's not happening in many of our walleye fisheries, which used to be happening. And there's probably several reasons for that. We can speculate on what those are. One of them is definitely climate change. We have a longer growing season. And we think in a number of our lakes, and particularly in the northwest part of the state, maybe not so much in Oneida County yet, because it seems to be moving eastward, we think there's a strong competitive relationship between largemouth bass and walleye. Specifically, it's called intergill predation. Basically, these are competitors which eat one another. And for about a 35-year period in the late 1900s, late 20th century, walleye had the upper hand. But now with climate change, probably due to the fact that the growing season for sunfish is a month to a month, month and a half longer, and bass are in the syntrachid or sunfish group, bass, largemouth in particular, now have a competitive advantage. And we're seeing a trend where many walleye lakes, historical, naturally self-sustaining, good walleye lakes, are now sliding quickly into a situation where they're largemouth bass dominated, and even some of the historical world-class walleye fisheries like the Chippewa Flowage now appear to be in this state. And this is going to require way more than just if we're going to change this or counterman this, it's going to take more than just regulation, something like a slot limit. Slot limit is sort of a panacea type thing. It's perceived to be very sexy because where it's applied correctly, it works so well, but it is only one tool of many and may not be effective in terms of solving the overall problem.
You know, there may be some listeners who don't understand what a slot limit or what that means. Could you explain that, Frank?
A slot is, you know, the typical traditional regulation with sizes is a minimum size. You can only keep fish larger than a certain size, say a 15-inch minimum for walleye. The walleye needs to be 15 inches before you can keep it. A slot is a situation where we designate a mid-range portion of the fish population as off-limits to harvest. For example, you cannot harvest a walleye between 14 and 18 inches. You can take some fish that are smaller than that because typically there's a surplus of such fish and can take a relatively small number, in this case a one bag of fish over 18 inches. But a slot is you've designated some mid portion of the size range that you can catch but not keep.
Bill, I thank you very much. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, although I wanted to say it's interesting what you said about largemouth bass, because 12, 13 years ago we almost never caught a largemouth bass. We'd occasionally catch a small one, and now we very regularly catch between 18 and 22 inch largemouth, and that falls right in line with exactly what you said.
That sounds to me like the early stages of bass colonization. You still got the bigger bass there. When it reaches its peak, you're going to have a ton of bass that are 11 and a half to 12 inches long, that dominated by 7 to 8 year old slow growing male largemouth bass. And when you get to that point, you most definitely can kiss your walleyes goodbye.
Hmm. There you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And the largemouth bass tend to be put back more, I think, into the water than walleye. When you catch a walleye,
right? We got we're dealing with a fish community where we have two predators that eat one another. But you add in the third predator in the food web, which is over them, i.e., man. And man is, you know, we perceive walleye not just as a sports fish, but a eating fish. And in most cases, when a legal size walleye is caught, it is kept and it is eaten. Exactly the opposite for largemouth bass in particular. It's basically a catch-and-release fishery. So in situations where you have a relationship between walleye and largemouth bass, and maybe the thing is sort of teetering on the edge of swinging one way or the other, we certainly believe that selective harvest by man can push it in the direction of largemouth bass.
Frank Pratt, our guest today, recently retired after 37 years as a senior fisheries biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, reflecting on his 40 years' work in fisheries here and talking a little bit about the current, maybe the future of our fisheries in the state. I'm Larry Mueller. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking our fisheries here in the state with Frank Pratt, retired after 37 years with the DNR, taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. Gene in Oshkosh has a question for you or comment. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Frank. I've been a fisher person all my life. And, in fact, my son-in-law is with the Department of Interior Fish and Wildlife, really around the world. We live on one of the channels off Lake Winnebago. And I could not have imagined the change in fishery since when we built the house in 1970 and Winnebago's fishery now. There are many areas in the lake where you can't even motor through it. The weed problem is a major, major problem here in Winnebago. I know we've talked to a couple of the DNR people, and they said, well, it's the nursery of fish. And that's true, except we'd like to catch some walleyes the way we did. I mean, I've got an 8.5-pound walleye mounted on my wall here. And I guess what I'm asking is, well, two questions. One is what can we expect from the proliferation of weeds in a body like Lake Winnebago? It's changed the fishery completely. And now, since we're just off the lake on a channel, we got 2-3 guys every day coming through in boats and fishing. And what are they catching? They're catching bass, no. Largemouth bass. That was never the case. We used to catch. You can't find a northern. The fishery has changed dramatically. And would you care to speak?
Comment on that? Sure.
Well, I hesitate to steal the thunder from Kendall Kampke, who is a good friend of mine, who actually mentored under me at Haywood about 20 years ago, who's your manager down there. But from my conversations with Kendall and from what I read, I understand that there are now zebra mussels in Lake Winnebago. The water is clearing up, and what you're dealing with is more rooted aquatic vegetation rather than phytoplankton now, because the zebra mussels eliminate so much of the floating algae that the water clarity clears and allows sunlight penetration to a deeper depth. You've always had ample nutrients, so now you have a situation where basically the aquatic plant community has shifted from phytoplankton to rooted macrophytes. When that happens, if you look at other similar situations, say Lake St. Clair, basically what happens is eventually the walleye fishery is probably going to shift to a sunfish-based fishery, largemouth bass, bluegill, et cetera, because the habitat will become, if things continue in that direction, the habitat will become way more suitable for the sunfish than for walleye. Now, I hate to be a harebringer of bad news, if you have walleye objectives, if that's your primary objective, then the future may not be particularly bright. But if you're able to bait and switch, so to speak, and shift your species emphasis and accept the sunfish, the syntrachid community is your key fishery, then basically all I can say is things are likely to change, but they're going to change to something
that's different,
equally as good.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Gene, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Bob a chance in Milwaukee to join in. Bob, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. Frank, I'm from northern Rhode Island originally, so I have to ask you this question. Did you ever fish on Lake Chagagagaga, Manchagagaga, Chabunagana Mug in Webster, Massachusetts?
Yes, they also known as Webster Lake, yes. It's a good two-story lake. It's a good bass lake. It's also a very good trout lake.
Yeah, I had a friend who had a place there and spent many enjoyable summers.
Supposedly it means I'll fish on my side, you fish on your side, nobody fish in the middle, but I think that's made up.
Just thought I'd inject a little humor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. And he was able to pronounce that lake name. That's something else. Oh, boy. Norman Wausau. Norman, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Frank, I'd like to ask you, we've seen a resurgence of the whitefish in the Bay of Green Bay and in Lake Michigan. And I noticed that the limits for the commercial harvesters have gone up remarkably. Why hasn't it gone up for the individual fishermen who now has 10 fish limit per day. And my reason for saying this, because you mentioned about having the problem with recruitment of fishermen, the problem is for us here, like in central Wisconsin, it's a 130-mile drive or 150-mile drive one way, and if you take a limit of fish, you have to go back the next day if you want to get it. Why couldn't you have like a limit of 15 fish, and then we'd only have to make one trip, and we could conserve all that gas, which we're on such short supply. And while we're talking about that, I noticed the same thing with the goose hunting, which is not a subject of the debate today, but they gave you three tickets at Horicon, and you had to make a separate trip each day for getting one goose, and so we finally abandoned goose hunting altogether, and I think a lot of people do that. Now, I don't know how to address the other side of that issue, which if you give people too many limits of fish and they find good fishing, they clean out the fishery, and then there's nothing left for anybody else. So that's the other side of the issue,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, what do you think, Frank?
I'm going to defer to the Great Lakes manager or whoever's in Green Bay relative to that specific question, because I don't have enough specific knowledge of that. But I can talk about a little bit about the last observation he made. That's the challenge, the fish manager, basically what we call tragedy of the commons, because in public waters, we cannot limit access or the number of anglers on a lake. This, we can't limit entry. Therefore, when a fishery gets good and the word gets out, no matter what the limits are, eventually you run the risk. There is a very real danger that you run the risk that you'll eventually get so much fishing pressure and so much harvest, even if it's just a large number of fishermen taking a small number of fish, where you can at least cut into the quality of the fishery, and in severe instances, even cut into the abundance of that particular fish population. So our regulations are always going to be, for that reason, are always going to err on the conservative side. I don't think that you're going to see many situations where bag limits are going up, size limits are coming down, things like that, because in most fisheries, the history of fisheries tells us that fishing pressure will eventually lead to a decline in the fishery. So our regulations, I think, are going to remain in most instances on the conservative side. And you need to know that for whitefish right now, I believe there's a proposal on this spring questionnaire, or it might have actually been on last spring's questionnaire, for inland waters to bring the whitefish bag limits down commensurate to what they are in the Great Lakes. In other words, a 10. Right now it's...
Yeah.
Right now, it's 25 pounds plus one fish, which even on our better inland whitefish fishery, say a lake like Whitefish Lake in Sawyer County, is an exorbitant number of fish. And if any large number, if any even a moderate number of fishermen started taking that number of whitefish, I would be very concerned about a decline in the quality of the whitefish fishery.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at panfish, I think that we over-harvest panfish in many lakes.
Asking the right guy, because it's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. From the standpoint of quality size, say from the standpoint of being able to go and maybe once in a dog's age catching, say, a 10-inch bluegill out of a lake that has capability of doing it, our lakes have been so severely, panfish fisheries have been so severely over-harvested from the standpoint of big panfish for so many years that most anglers don't even realize that these fisheries are capable of producing, say, 10-inch bluegill. Now, in my alter ego private sector persona, I also do a little bit of fisheries management and survey work on some private waters. And I've also fished some private waters. My brother married into a cranberry family in northern Rhode Island, and they have they live right next to an impoundment, which is basically where the consortium controls all the land access to the lake, so it's essentially a private lake. And virtually nobody fishes it. And when I go there on vacation, I can catch 10-inch bluegills
regularly.
Oh.
But if I go across the street to a similar public water, you're never going to see a bluegill bigger than 7.5 inches. And the same is true as public water in northern Wisconsin. Even our better lakes, even lakes like Lake Chetek and Nelson Lake, which historically produce big bluegill, you're very hard-pressed to catch a large bluegill. But I can go to a number of waters that are public waters, but the land is privately controlled, so they're ipso facto private, limited entry situation, and catch, if I'm willing to catch and release, catch large numbers of bluegill that are 9.5, 10, even 10.5 inches long. And the whole secret is fishing pressure. But it's that tragedy of the commons thing. It's a lot of fishermen catching a moderate or small number of large panfish. And I'm not saying the panfish populations are in danger. They're not. They're very prolific species, crappie, bluegill, et cetera. You're always going to have large numbers of them, but you can fish the quality size. You can fish the size structure down. And we have done that in virtually every public water in Wisconsin.
And if you turn around, my favorite fishing is musky fishing, so I do a lot of musky fishing. And that, on the other hand,
is a stunning success story. Yeah. No matter how you turn it over and look at our musky fishery, they're... Our musky fisheries have probably not been in better shape for half a century. We have many lakes that are producing lots of fish. We have lakes that are producing large fish. You can pick and choose your objective, whether or not you want to catch a large number of moderate-sized fish or go and occasionally catch a very big fish. But there's no way we can look at our musky fishery and find anything but silver lining to silver lining.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Jesse in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Jesse. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say that I worked at Southeastern Wisconsin's DNR fishery coordinator for 6 or 7 years, the best job of my life, up under Dick Smith out of Eagle, Wisconsin. And I think you guys hit the nail on the head when you said that angler education, take a kid fishing, can help us solve a lot of the issues that we're talking about. Because when you talk about walleye versus largemouth bass, or what we did in the 70s with largemouth bass throughout the nation, as we made this a fish that you catch and release. Before then, they ate these fish. Nowadays, they catch and release that fish. And I believe we need to make that fish again something that is worthwhile catching and releasing. And it's all public persona. It's all what we do as people who lead our community and our society in fishing. The same thing when it comes to our panfish. I agree with you talking that we're out fishing those quality panfish. And how do we do that? Through angler education. And when we say angler education, when I was using it, I was in the school system. Mind you now that job of angler education in southeastern Wisconsin has been gone for the last 5 years. There is no more Southeastern Wisconsin coordinator for angler education. Urban communities are huge. It's an untapped source. Just like in deer hunting, that we have brought in now more females in deer hunting, more minorities in deer hunting. Same thing needs to happen in fishing. We are untapped, and we need those people to participate, to bring those revenues as well as the conservation idea into fisheries. Fisheries are huge, and if you can get it any time, you can take that kid fishing and have that smile come on that face. I don't care if it's a bluegill, I don't care if it's a bullhead, catfish, whatever they're catching, you've done your job. So I want to tell Frank, first of all those years he spent working for the DNR in the state of Wisconsin, I commend you, I thank you. I just wish that we could get that program back. And I'm going to be quiet and let you guys talk.
All right. Thank you very much, Jesse.
Thank you so much. I could not have said that any better. And I'm going to work in my post-retirement profession here to make sure we get that emphasis back. That's going to be, I'm not going to rest until we give youth angler education, aquatic education, emphasis on youth, its proper due. It's not happening right now, and it needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things about bass, people don't like the taste of bass as well as walleye, for example. And that's, I think, another reason why they get released.
That is correct. And some of that is just perception. isn't true. And it definitely is a largemouth bass, particularly early in the season when the water is cold, are very palatable and are on a par in eating quality with walleye, which then raises the problem, well, in northern Wisconsin, we have a closed season for bass.
Yeah, I was going to say you can't catch bass.
Which is probably the most stupid, nonsensical, counterproductive regulation, at least in real time, that I can possibly think of. That regulation, if we're serious about quality bass fishing, if we're serious about allowing anglers to eat a bass once in a while, if we're serious about restoring the balance to walleye in at least a few lakes where walleye and largemouth bass are sort of teetering in this, you know, this biological warfare mode, that season for bass, which is supposedly to protect spawning bass, which it really does not do, and it's not necessary to do, needs to go away.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if that's going to happen. Dave in Appleton has a question for your comment. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, gentlemen. We're on a 68-acre lake in northern Wisconsin. It's got an inlet and an outlet, 22-foot maximum depth, a tannin-stained lake. It's got largemouth bass and various panfish, but it's also got an exotic species, rusty crayfish. There are some perch there. In fact, we got 13.5 perch through the ice this winter. A few northern, no smallmouth bass. Now, I know there's a lot of, and not a lot of weeds in this lake either. I know there are too many factors to consider beyond this, but what can be done in this fishery to eliminate or get this rusty crayfish population?
Okay, you're going to hear a counterculture argument from me that's not particularly politically correct. I'm going to tell you what can be done is nothing, but just wait. Because what's probably, if the community per se is healthy enough going in, over time it will resist that exotic, particularly if it's just one exotic. I have a number of lakes in Surrey County where rusty crayfish 20 years ago were a huge problem. Round Lake, for example, they got in there and they virtually eliminated all the vegetation. And it was so bad you couldn't put a fish, leave a fish on a stringer on your dock overnight. They'd eat it down to a skeleton. And now you go back to the same lake and you'd be hard-pressed to find any crayfish. And 7 out of 8 of those crayfish are now the original native species, or Orchonectes ferulus. You still find a few rusties, but they have achieved some sort of what a biologist would call homeostasis in that community. They've come down to a manageable level, and this often is the case with many exotics. You're going to hear it from me right now. I'm telling you, I'm not saying that exotic species are not a problem, but I am going to tell you right out that they are nowhere near the main problem in our fisheries. And one of the problems that we have in fisheries management is we have allotted so much emphasis to exotic species that our entire institutional will and our entire program funding, manpower, and everything is focused almost exclusively on it. And we have other major problems that are not being addressed because we're so over-focused on exotic species. That's not the company line. And I wouldn't have been able to make that statement if I was still in the employ of Wisconsin DNR. I'm not saying aquatic invasive species are not a problem, but I am saying they're nowhere near the main problems. We need to refocus.
Thanks, Dave, for calling. Katie and Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm calling because my brother, well, I come from a fish-crazy family, basically, and my brother is the especially fish-crazy guy in the family, and, you know, he's real into fisheries. He's a biologist. He's an Eagle Scout. He's an educator. I mean, he's got all this great stuff that he's committed to, and certainly fisheries are central to that. I wonder if you have any suggestions for how he might sort of professionally or occupationally embrace his commitment to fisheries.
Okay. Well, I could speak from my own personal history might give you a few hints.
Okay.
I grew up fishing, and I decided about, like, in junior high school, like age 13, I wanted this to be my profession. So I then went and got a bachelor's degree in biology and followed up with a master's degree in fisheries, and was lucky enough to land a biologist job. I'll tell you right out of the box, you need a minimum of a master's degree to crack into the profession. There aren't that many professional biologists out there. They tend to love their jobs, so they last and they work in those positions a long time. And you got to be damn good, damn lucky, and very well educated. And you also have to be totally dedicated to the concept of service, because contrary to popular belief and all this stuff about public servants being overpaid and being paid more than they are in the private sector, blah, 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 at least in my profession, it's totally untrue. I retired after 37 years making a wage of $56,000, which in normal terms is a great salary, and I would say yes, it is. But relative to other people with the same degree of seniority with a master's degree, every survey that's out there says that state employees, public service employees in those types of positions are underpaid by a margin of at least 30%. So what he needs to examine his heart, and the number one thing, get used to the fact that he's not going to get rich, and it's all about service. It's all about serving the resource. It's all about serving the people who use the resource, and it's all about serving future generations, and that's the currency that we deal with.
Right. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for
calling. Appreciate your call. Well, I tell you what, this has been a great conversation, Frank, and I'd love to have you come back, and in particular, when you are getting going with your with your new retirement avocation, I hope you'll come back and talk with us, because we'd like to promote that on the show.
Oh, most definitely. I hope it's in the near future. And there's other things on the fire, too. All of my fellow managers who retired about the same time I did, and there were a slug of us because we had literally driven out of state service, we are organizing, and we're going to be advocating for good fisheries management. So we'll have some things to say about that as well.
Always a pleasure, Frank. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Frank Pratt, recently retired after 37 years working as a senior fisheries biologist with the Department of Natural Resources. There are Teresa Stabs, an aquatic resources education director for the Bureau of Fisheries Management with the DNR, phoned in or emailed in with several websites for angler education that relate to the DNR. And Rachel Owens, our on-air producer today. Rachel, if you can grab those off and put those on my Facebook page. We'll put those up on the Facebook page for you. There's some general information, classroom and field materials for the fishing kids program, and then the loaner program as well, kids and parents loaner program. These are all great programs, and we will put those up on the Facebook page so you can go to them after you're done listening to me, or after you're done listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, or maybe while you're listening, you can do that. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the impact of bioenergy crops on plant diversity. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.